You're listening to Heaving Bosoms, the podcast where two best friends recap romance novels while being authorities on historical boat stuff and yelling, "And another thing!" HBs. When we left off yesterday, our primary hero had experienced consensual sex with the heroine for the first time, and his whole worldview changed. Turns out, he likes it better when she's into it. I bet everything's gonna turn around now, you know? Mostly. Right? Let's find out how these three find their HEA together, shall we? Here we go. They decide to play like off and on fuck playing house. We got this like montage of her having sex with one of them and then the other one day on, day off.
Yes. And she's noticing the differences between them and how she enjoys both flavors because unsurprisingly, Benjamin is sweet and is more about giving pleasure, whereas Edmund is harsher and about getting pleasure from her, and she likes both of them.
And you know what? She gets it along the way, but it really is a byproduct of him taking his pleasure.
Some people are into that, Mel.
No, I'm not criticizing it. I'm just saying that, like, I feel like when we say, like, it's all about him taking pleasure, I wonder if that implies she didn't come. She does.
No, she does enjoy.
When we talk about Benjamin giving pleasure, like we see a scene where he's like, "I want to taste you," and they're making out, and she's like, "Aren't you already?"
Down for the first time.
Yeah, he goes down on her, and she's like, "Benjamin, what are you doing?" And he's like, "Oh, cool it.
So
you're gonna like
this
it.
Is important, listener." So a while ago, we learned that her husband, her marriage was a false marriage. So she was essentially his beard. And they had
sex. He had a very special friend, and he went to a lot of Molly houses.
Yep. And they would have sex once a month. It was always doggy style and very perfunctory. And so this is her first time having orgasms. This is her first time enjoying sex at all. And so it's essentially a revelation. And I don't remember why he died, but he died, and so now
he got the pleurisy, you know. I guess, or something. It's fine. They ended up just having like a friendship, a business relationship, a partnership, but it wasn't romantic at all.
Yeah, and so they had like a mutual respect, and it kind of in a lot of ways worked out because he didn't care what she got up to, so she still got to read. She had her library and her studies and things like that. Like ultimately, frankly, sounds kind of like the dream in 1716.
Yeah.
Oh, this is when we learned that Bridget has gotten with the
the cook.
Mr. Bone.
Yeah.
I think
Mr. Bone is throwing her some bone.
Well, and I think one of the reasons I'm super excited to read that one, actually, and I do actually plan on I don't know that I'm going to read any of the other ones in the series, but at least that one.
I'm excited for you to tell me about it.
Both of them are very unconventionally attractive. Yeah. In fact, they're described as unattractive in this book. And so, like, I'm excited by that. I say that I'm going to read it, but I could have read that any time between reading this and the last 15 books that I read.
Yeah. So, yeah, you know.
We'll see. Anyway, so I'm going to zippy zap us. We're in Nassau. And.
Oh, yeah, because, okay, sorry, listener. His plan now and the plan that he sort of clears with Benjamin to make sure that his friend is on his side is that they're going to go to Nassau.
That's a strong word.
I know. He gets him on board. But anyway,
They're going to go to Nassau.
He tells him, you're right, he's a spineless little mealworm because he tells him what's going to happen. And Benjamin definitely doesn't like it, but he's like,
and Benjamin's like, are you sure?
I guess you're the leader here.
Yeah. Anyway, so they're going to go to Nassau to fuel up or whatever you do on pirate boats, get more hardtack or something. And then after that, they're going to head to Boston where she was, and they're going to use her as a lure to get this guy to the boat so that they can kidnap him, present him to the dad. And then as a result, he'll then be re-inherited and he'll get the respect and, acceptance that he's always longed for from his asshole sperm donor. So, yeah, they go to Nassau, and on the way to Nassau, she overhears a couple of the crew talking and being like, yeah, he's excited to go to Boston because he finally has a chance to get his hands on Symes. And then she overhears them saying, I don't know what he's going to do with the widow. No big deal. And so she's like, oh my God, they've been taking me for a fool this whole time. I've been feeling all of the romantic and sweet feelings for them. And I am just a means to an end for them.
Because at this point, she has acknowledged that she cares about them beyond sex, essentially.
Yeah.
Wait,
we didn't tell about the double penetration scene that happens before Nassau, too. Dude, they have dinner. They have an Easter dinner for no reason. They have just enough wine to be like, I bet we could maybe get a little frisky in front of each other and see if she's down. And so the captain is like, wow, Mrs. Collingwood or whatever, you look so delicious. And I'm going to kiss up on your neck. And then Benjamin comes up from behind her and he's doing a kiss up on her. Oh, and then the captain looks at Benjamin and he's like, she tastes so good, you should have a taste. And Benjamin waits until she goes up on her toes to kiss him. And then the captain's like, it's on like Donkey Kong. Go lock the door, Benjamin. And I'm going to start undressing her now. Hilariously, they're weeks into the trip, right? This is the first time that everybody gets completely and utterly naked.
Oh, yeah. She's never actually seen Edmund naked before.
No. For the most part, he just gets his cock out and goes to town and then puts his cock back in. And that's it. He's basically got a cock pocket for the first, I don't know, half of their voyage.
That is not base. I've been reading a lot of cock pockets lately, and that is not.
What's the difference?
I guess because he doesn't take off his pants.
Okay. Yeah.
I see what you're saying now. I see what you're saying. I was fussy because I've been reading a lot of really
the reptile
good,
skin.
I've been reading a lot of really good cock pocket romance lately. And I was like, how dare you?
How dare you besmirch the name of cock pocket?
Of cock pockets.
Anyway, so then they end up spit roasting her for a minute. And then after that, Benjamin gets underneath her and penetrates her vaginally. And then she's like, whoop, what's happening back there?
And we're going to whimsy this.
They do a DP.
Lubeless anal scene. It's fine.
Yeah, what is that? There's so much lubeless anal in this book, and I could not handle it.
Do you think they're keeping lube? What do you think they're going to use as lube on a ship?
Any oil? Or at least spit?
I mean, spit is just...
Lard?
That's the most heinous thing you've ever said.
I'm not suggesting it. I'm saying it is a lubricant that is on hand, probably, on a pirate ship.
Do you think that they're going to waste that on sex when they could just swish around in her juices?
They could just... What? Injure her beyond repair?
No, you and I are on the same page here, Melody. I'm not saying that this is okay.
You don't think that they picked up some coconut oil along the way at some point?
If you think that they're using any of that for this instead of making those meals with hardtack not taste like shit after 2 months on the water?
I don't know. It's so much lubeless. Anal.
There it is. It's all lubeless
it's
anal.
Woof.
Aside from her own little...
I couldn't whimsy it. I couldn't whimsy it at all. I was just like, oh my God, everyone. everyone's in pain, including that gay couple that she ends up spying on later.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, and I was thinking about them, too. They were in the kitchen when they did anal.
That's why I thought they were in the kitchen. They're going to just grab a handful of lard. I don't know.
Oh, I just thought they were in there to get away, like, to be away from everybody.
I mean, also, that's probably true. Like, I'm not,
I mean, 10,000% that only people...
I was just hoping against hope.
The only people on this ship, 100%, who have rooms of their own is the captain, the quartermaster, and the surgeon. Everybody else sleeps in the hold in... hammocks.
Yeah.
There's no way that there's no privacy on this boat. Anyway, it was fun. They had a little DP action and I whimsied the hell out of it. Melody couldn't, but I just kept trucking along.
Look, I trucked, but I was just like, I don't think that was enjoyable at all.
Okay, well, I whimsied along then, because by the end of it, I was like, oh, yeah, what a fun little DP situation. That's unrealistic as fuck. Let's go. All right.
So- yeah, but then she finds out that they have a dastardly plan, and she is but a mere cog, and she's fucking pissed about it, and she confronts the captain. Then the captain tells Benjamin that the jig is up. And then Benjamin just, like, skulks in the background for days and days and days. While the captain literally chains her ankle to the table so that she can't move about the ship anymore. And that's how she's going to spend the rest of the time going to Nassau.
So they get to Nassau and she gets warned. They're like, you need to stay close to me or Benjamin, because otherwise you are not safe. If you think that what we did was bad.
If you think our rapes were bad, you have no idea.
You have no idea.
Okay, you're going to experience some real rapes here in Nassau. And you might be the only lady who doesn't have a syphilis. And boy, do they love being patient zero. So they're going to try to get you. Tell a listener that that's not accurate. You can't. That's literally what they say. Sabrina can't argue with me because those are the two things they tell her.
I think one of the funniest things, Melody, what? One of my favorite things about you and me.
Okay.
Is statistically, I'm more likely to like a book based on history.
Okay.
Or be more forgiving of a book. And I think one of my favorite things about books that you just really don't like.
Mm-hmm.
You are the most so talkative. You are like, I'm running this show.
I gotta run it. Okay, otherwise Sabrina will lead you astray, listener.
Sabrina is going to paint this shit with rainbow and sunshine and forget a lot of things because Sabrina whimsied it and is like, oh my God, you're right. I did forget about that because I just went right past. And so Melody has probably cut out quite a bit of this already, listener, but there have been multiple times where I'm like, all right, I'm going to motor us. All right, I'm going to push us through. There are so many things I was just going to skip. And Melody's like, hang on. I need to get my words in edgewise about this specific thing.
I'm not going to let you forget this part.
And I wasn't gonna forget that. We're not even to that part yet, listener.
Aren't we?
We are to the part. We are the part where Melody just basically word for word said what they said.
Yeah.
Could I have given you the gist of that conversation in roughly 25% of the words? Absolutely.
But would it have been as impactful, Sabrina? I ask.
No,
you.
Not even close. There's a. Yeah. I'm not saying I'm unhappy that you do this. It just makes me laugh because if we go into an episode and I know that you did not like book and I was like, I whimsied a lot of it.
I'm going to be forcing you to have several seats.
And that's fine. That's fine. That's fine. But also, I think the funniest part is every single time I'm like, it's time to whimsy. There have been multiple times. This happened in Dark Lover. This happened in this one. This happened in pretty much any book that I've been like, yeah, it was fine. And you're not like, I'm like, all right, I'm going to whimsy because I'm looking at the time. And you're like,
yeah.
You're like, okay. And then before I can even get a word out, you're like, wait.
And another thing.
I know that Sabrina's going to skip this part and it's very important. These are our longest episodes because you're like, I can't whimsy it.
I'm not sorry.
I know you're not, which is why it's so funny to me. Like, if you were legitimately sorry about it, and you were like, man, I feel so bad that I'm doing this, like, I wouldn't give you shit about it. But, like, I'm going to give you shit because I know that you're like, I'm not sorry.
Highly unapologetic over here. Feeling great.
I'm not
feeling great about my actions.
Also, frankly, after your experience with today, I think you need this. I think you need.
Thank you. Oh, my God. Listener, I'm a hot mess express. I need to be an authority on something. And I can be an authority on something I dislike. Okay.
Okay, what I'm hearing is we just need to somehow plan out your not great days to go along with recording books that you also didn't like so that you can just get all of your feelings out in a productive, fun, entertaining way.
You know what's interesting, though? It's actually not hard to do that because I... like on every personality test I take, the number one thing that comes back with is empathy. And I don't actually think that's necessarily a good thing. It just means that I feel the feelings of whatever I'm consuming in that moment. So like, when I think of empathy, it's like people are like, oh my gosh, it means they're such a good person. Like, that's not necessarily what that means.
No.
That just means that, I feel feelings that are not mine if I encounter them a lot of times.
So what I'm hearing...
So it's easy for me to be, like, fucking pissed off if I'm reading a book I don't like.
Listener, I don't know if you heard this, but Melody is the feeling empathetic one in this partnership, and I'm just a cold rock of a human.
That's not what I meant at all.
All of these books.
What are you talking about? No. Don't twist my words, you asshole. No. What I'm saying is, like, it's really easy for me to have my bad days.
I get what you're saying.
Yeah, be like during a book that like is very angsty or that I just like outright don't like or whatever. Because my mood often
follows. So that's interesting. So I definitely feel that because, like, I feel all of the things as I'm reading these books. It's part of the joy for me. I don't really understand romantic attraction. So like sitting in these characters feels really nice. Like it's fun, you know, and like going through all of the experience, like feeling all of the things. And I think part of the difference is that it doesn't sit with me. This is just a book that I read. And so, like, especially now that it's been, what, a week since I finished this book? Like, I have my notes and things like that, but, like, it's been a week. I've literally read 11 books since I finished.
Monster.
Actually, it's probably not quite 11, but
you
it's up there.
Beautiful monster.
It's up there.
I believe it.
So, like, at this point, like,
it's in your rear view.
Yeah, it's so far in the rear. Like, I have notes and things like that, but, like, we already know that I am a rose-colored glasses hindsight person. Like, call it the Swiss cheese memory, call it whatever you want. Call it the whimsy, call it whatever you want. Like, so, like, at this point, like, I tend to remember the things I like about the thing instead of one of the other things, which is, I don't know, both a blessing and a curse, you know?
Yeah. So they get to Nassau and she's like, joke's on you, you drunk fucks. I'm going to Homer Simpson into the hedge of this inn and and escape.
In what world? They go into this inn. They're in this pub bar inn thing, listener. Logistics with Sabrina. What the actual fuck? These dudes, they are so full of themselves to think that she's not going to try and escape. Right. Yeah. By the way, she's been literally chained in the stateroom, but suddenly they're out and about in the freedom and they think like that she's been being sexually assaulted this entire fucking book. You think that that's going to be what stops her from running away? Like, what? Okay. Mm-hmm.
This is just the reality for women.
This is just the world. This is just the world we live in. I can't go 10 feet without somebody whipping out their dick and trying to shove it in. So, like, I may as well get to my uncle and save his life since I can't.
Right.
Like, and so then they get to this pub and now they're drinking And this boggled my mind. Benjamin, what the actual fuck are you doing? You essentially have a captive with you. Not essentially. You do. You have a
captive.
You
have a captive. A legit
with
captive.
You, who is not tied up. And then you are sitting across the table from her. And I can understand Edmund being a nitwit and forgetting that she's behind him because he's looking to his left, getting drunk and being merry with his buddies. Benjamin is sitting across the table looking Edmund dead in his stupid
pirate
face.
No, he's looking. He's watching the same story. He's listening to the same story.
I get it, but he is across the table, which means out of his... You didn't notice a lady in a fucking...
Nah.
17, 16...
In a booby dress?
Whore dress?
Yeah, she's in a harlot dress.
Get up and then run into the serving maid and then have a quick conversation and then disappear out the back door of the kitchen?
Yeah.
Benja fucking men.
I mean, no, this whole thing was baffling, but they're drunk as hell. And so she runs and she runs and runs and runs. And then they figure out and they go after her. And then she does get
assaulted
by a dude. He's trying to do more. It was rough.
Yeah. That was a rough one because he's like, well, fine, if you don't want me. Because like he can't get it up because he has whiskey right now. And he's like, fine, if you don't want me, you can. I'll fuck you with this wood thing. The baton thing that he has. And I was like, oh, I was horrified that that was actually going to happen on page. And I was like, please don't do this to us. It didn't because Benjamin and Edmund
the boys get there
show
just
up
in time.
And Edmund shoots that man dead in the face. She is covered in viscera. And they're like, all right, party's over. We're getting back on the ship. And
he
so
has the audacity
to
be mad at her. He's like, I told you about the rapes you would encounter. Why, how dare you not listen to me? And then he paddles her with a belt.
Paddle, yeah, whips her. With
he whips
a belt.
Her
like,
with a
oh
belt.
Oh my God. As punishment.
And this is and the then, one, oh, this is the closest that Benjamin comes to showing any kind of backbone. And what he does is say, I am not going to be part of this. He hands the belt back to his BFF assaulter. And then he just leaves her alone with him. I'm not going to be a party to it, okay? Yeah. But I will
I'm
turn my back and
you.
Let you do whatever you need to do.
This
Benjamin,
was really rough.
The fuck?
This was really rough. Especially because because she's sobbing. She's in pain. And he, like, leaves. He walks out. And he's like, man, I don't ever react like this. I don't do things in the heat of the moment. I should have waited to punish her until I was cool-headed like that time with the mast. And yeah, that was rough. So now they're like at odds and she has decided. She's like, well, you know what? I know that I care about the both of them, but I can use this to my advantage, essentially. And I'm just going to go back to treating this like a transaction. My coin purse is my pussy and I've got money to spare. And so she is decided that she is going to essentially seduce Edmund for better treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And then the first time that she does, he is super into it and he can't believe that she's reacting this way to him, even after everything that's happened. Because he's at this point, he's realized that he cares about her. He won't say the L word, but he cares deeply about her. Like,
and he's
never
a
has
dumbass
about a woman before. And he's regretted a lot of things. Not that he ever goes to say sorry. And
no,
she does. And when he realizes that she is play acting,
she just got vacant eyes.
She's not there. Oh, yeah. He's mad. He's mad. Yeah. And he's like, I am not sleeping here. You can have this room. I'm out. I'm done. And so he leaves. He doesn't sleep there for a couple of days. And she is locked up, still chained in that room. She's let out like once a day to go to the privy. And then they decide to do a pirate ship pirate stuff because they see a boat. And then we have this whole scene of him on the boat. But the important part is everybody is over there except for her because she's still chained up in the stateroom.
Mm-hmm.
Raves because he can't have the surgeon go over because he needs to be safe. So
he needs to be there to take care of the injured later.
Up, and then the carpenter to be able to fix the boat. Which, I don't know why it never crossed my mind that they would just
me
have
neither.
A carpenter. Like, every time they reference, I was like, it makes sense for there to be a carpenter
totally.
On a 1716 boat, and that's a position, but it literally, never in my life has it crossed my mind that they would.
No, for sure
I don't know what I thought they did if just, okay, well, we're going down.
No, they just sailed with holes in the ship until they got to port, I thought, probably.
Yeah. Or something. Yeah, I guess. I don't know. Who knows? I guess I was just kind of like, either you make it or you don't.
Sure.
You don't fix it. You just got to go.
Anyway, so Graves uses that opportunity to go into the stateroom and fuck with her.
And he is a creepy son of a bitch. Like, he's disgusting. And so, long story short, he is basically describing to her how he's going to assault her and torture her and turn her into his one. She's his one precious. She's the one who's going to live. And it's disgusting. And then he, like, touches up on her. He gets up over her dress. And then they smell fire. Because when he knocked everything off the table, surprise, the light is
the oil
fire,
lamp.
Bud. And so now it's broken on the ground, and like the fire is passing, like it's going up the leg, and he's like, oh no, gotta get out of here before somebody catches me, and leaves her chained up in there. And so now she's like, what the hell do I do? So she does what she can. She dumps water on it. She dumps the chamber pot on it. It's all heinous. And then we see Edmund and Benjamin on the pirate ship, or the not pirate ship, and he sees there's smoke. And he goes running over there after getting Benjamin to cover his ass and goes in there. And he's like, oh, my God, what happened? And gets her side of the story, essentially. And then that's when he goes to find out what happened from Graves. And then that's when he ends up locking him up in the hole. We've already talked about that.
So then this is when he's like, okay, hey, it's really shitty for me to leave you as a sitting duck when I know there's an active predator on board that's not actually even me, you know? Like, wow, I thought it was only me. No, there is another active predator on board. So as a result,
he never considered himself a predator. Don't lie.
So as a result, here's the key to your shackle. You don't have to be shackled anymore. You can come and go as you please. You don't have to sleep here.
My question, Mel.
Yeah.
Is, why did you give her the key instead of just unlocking it?
Well, because she needed the talisman. She needed to put the key around her neck as a symbol of her freedom. Ma'am, what kind of freedom do you have? Yeah, because then later she puts her uncle's ring there too, remember? And she's like, I'm going to put...
Sure don't. Why would you ask me that?
Great
if I'm
question.
Asking, remember? No, I don't. Clearly, I don't. If you think I didn't, I don't read half the stuff you think I don't remember about this book that I do. And now you think that the one thing I do remember is like an offhand comment that she puts a ring on a necklace. I love you and the things that you think are important to me, Melody.
Also, there are bumblebees on the ring, just so everybody knows. That was important to me. The dead-eyed middle distance stare that Sabrina is doing right now.
I
is so funny.
Have literally zero recollection of bumblebees even being mentioned.
Huh. Wow.
Okay. Does it get mentioned more than once?
Pretty sure, yeah. I don't know.
Shut the fuck up. It does not.
Pretty sure.
Whose ring? Her uncle's ring?
Yeah, man.
It's got
she turned the ring over in her hand, flicking her bitter thought away. The face, okay, hold on. Hannah threaded the gold band onto the cord she already had around her neck that bore the key to the shackle she'd worn. She'd taken to wearing it after the captain had handed it over, a pathetic symbol in her mind's eye, at the time that she'd held the key to her own freedom. Oh yes, you're very free now, aren't you, Hannah? That's her inner monologue, not me. She turned the ring over in her hand, flicking her bitter thought away. The face of the ring bore a trail of bees, wings outstretched. She had vague memories of her uncle wearing it during her youth. Then he explains that it was their father's.
The thing, I just think that the things I remember versus the things you remember, and not even joking stuff where it's like, I remember this, but you don't, or like vice versa, but like legitimately stuff where I have no idea and or you have no idea. And like the things that really just stick in my mind versus the things that really stick in your mind. If you could ask me if this how old this woman was.
Yeah.
For at least another month.
You would know
I would
she's 28.
Be able to tell you because she said explicitly on the page that she's 28 years old.
Here's the thing, man. I spend a shocking amount of my time thinking about pollinators. Okay.
Melody, I'm going to be really blunt with you.
Please.
It's not shocking. At all. That's one of the least shocking things you've ever said to me.
I think about homes I can make for pollinators. I think
you
about
and I
shit
literally
I can plant
had a conversation in the last 7 days about how you want to talk to your electricity company so that you can turn their byways for their light their electricity poles into a pollinator field. In what world do I not think that you
they just
think...
planted fucking Kentucky bluegrass over
yeah,
there?
Yeah, we're
like,
aware, but the point
imbeciles.
Of the point of this is that you're like, I don't know if you know this, but I think a lot about pollinate. Man, we had a conversation about them.
I know. I'm just saying, like, week. Of course I'm going to notice the bee detail. Come on.
And of course I'm going to notice the 28 detail. Like, none of this is surprising about either. It's just fascinating. Wildly. It takes all kinds. Well,
truly.
It really does. So we get to Boston. I'm just shooting us there. So they're bad. Like, this is a pull back and forth, whatever. And he is going through his little internal thing of like, oh my God, I love her so much, but also like my father's approval. And I'm like, have you even talked to your dad in the last 10
not
years?
In a
like,
decade. He told him that if you bring me Prometheus, I will let you be my son 10 years ago. And they haven't spoken since. It's bananas.
Yeah. And so they get to Boston and he has sent a letter with his peeps saying basically find this man and give him this letter. And the letter says, I have your lady,
niece.
Your niece. And if you meet with me, she'll be safe. So they end up going and meeting him. He owns a brewery. Edmund's like, hey, I'm here to take you back to Jamaica because I'm that dude's son. And in exchange, Hannah's going to go free. And the uncle's like, well, I guess that's my lot in life. And I was like, okay, you're pretty fucking chill about this.
Well, I actually liked this part because at first he's a bit of a mischievous dude. And so at first he's like,
this scene.
Yeah. He's like, why do you think I'm just going to go with you? Like, that's a weird thing to think. And then when he realizes that, like, she is way more entangled with this captain than anybody thought would be possible, he's like, oh, fuck. Yeah, I mean, like,
I don't really have an option here.
Yeah, my ordeal will end with a noose, but like your ordeal could go on forever and ever and ever and ever and ever because boy, do we love violence against women, you know?
Yeah,
I mean, that's literally what he says
yeah.
is like,
no,
they
you're
can
right.
they can torture you endlessly.
Yeah, I'm just going to die. And
yeah,
I've already lived a long life. So like,
right.
whatever.
Yeah.
So he pens a letter in his eminently recognizable hand.
Right. His notoriously recognizable hand. Yeah.
And gives her his ring as proof to his fellow brew guy and other people. This is his introduction to Boston society for her since he won't be there to do it for her, essentially. Because he's like, hey, I'm assuming I don't have time to get my affairs in order. And Edmund is like, in what world am I?
Yeah, no, we're for sure leaving now, bud.
We're leaving ASAP. There's enough hard tech on the ship to get us there. So there's no dilly-dallying in this port. And he goes. He's like, all right. And so she's pissed, frankly. She is like,
yeah.
What the fuck, Edmund? I cannot believe
and
that
crying.
You did this. And yeah, and like understandably
devastated.
Upset as hell. And then we zippy zap to Edmund and her uncle getting on the ship. Like, the entire walk over, they're actually having, like, a real buddy-bud chat, right? They're, firstly, Edmund's like, wow, this guy's actually kind of cool. Sucks that,
yeah.
I'm
sucks
about
to murder
this.
Him.
Jeez. Yeah. And then they get on the ship, and one of his dudes comes up and is like, Captain, Graves is gone.
Uh-huh. And at first, he thinks to himself, wow, Boston can deal with Graves. That's great. And then he's like, oh, no, Graves is obsessed with hurting and murdering What's-Her-Name. So, yeah, I gotta go and save What's-Her-Name. And he and the uncle fuck off to... Oh, and he also makes this decision. This is the moment in which he's like, wait, this is when it becomes real that he could capital L lose her. And so in this moment, he decides not only is he going to go save her, but he's also going to let the uncle go. He's going to, like, give up his dream of his father's acceptance.
You hold to the threads of a dream. Your father made promises years ago in a state of passion to a bastard son he's never had a spot of use for. Prometheus is a fool's errand, and you know it. You've found someone to approve of you, to speak your name with joy, and it isn't that bitter old man in Kingston. This voice was new, sure of itself, the part of himself that argued now didn't flutter like the previous doubts and questions being waved back and forth. Here was some true portion of his self whose voice overruled all others. You want her? Care for her? Yes. Do it, Edmund. Choose. And then he chooses her.
Yep.
He's like, I'm giving this up. I'm out. I'm done. I'm never going to see my dad again, which, you know, I've only spent two-thirds of my life with him. Yeah, whatever. So he is like, it's time to go save her. And I love that she saves herself.
Listen. Love it.
We zippy zap. And she is in this room because now he and the uncle are running back. They're like, we got to go save her. They are running, but they're not fast enough. And Graves shows up and he is just the scummiest, dirtiest, stankiest little shit. Mm-hmm. He is so creepy. And he's like, all right, now's the time. Like, I'm going to take you now and all of this stuff. And he says all sorts of disgusting, nasty things.
Mm-hmm.
And she stabs the shit out of him.
With his own knife.
With his own knife.
Right in the neck. And then, like, after he, like, sputters at her a little bit, she twists the knife to, like, really make it impactful. Ooh, it's nice.
Amazing. Like, I think one of my favorite things about this book is mm-hmm. her character development.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah.
She is such a great character. Just, like,
well, because this is the start of her coming into her own.
Yeah, I think that we've seen glimpses of it throughout the entire sure. book. And this is where she really, and you know, good for her, because she's like, I'm just done with men. Because she stabs this dude. He is now dead on the ground. And her uncle and Edmund walk in. And mm-hmm. they're like, oh, okay. My co-owner isn't going to like this.
Yeah.
Not going to like this at all.
We can't leave all this blood on the floor.
And she's like, okay, well, you deal with it. I need to go get different clothes because now I'm covered in blood. And also, yeah. I don't want this, my slore dress on anymore.
Right.
And so she takes that man's money, mm-hmm. Graves, steals
his... She robs his corpse. It's amazing. Mm-hmm.
And she goes down to that dress shop and walks in. And the lady is, firstly, horrified, which, like...
Yeah.
Fair. She is literally covered in blood.
Uh-huh.
And the lady, she's like, I'll take that dress. And the lady's like, well, I can't sell it to you because that's, you know, somebody else's dress. It's a commission. And she's like, here's all of my money.
Here's all the money. And, like, long story short, she gets the dress and then she's going to leave. But then another guy runs up and he's like, Mr. Till, Benjamin is hurt. And so we all need to go back to the ship.
Mm-hmm. But I think one of the, like, I don't want to skip over. I'm just going to make a comment on this.
Yeah,
this entire time, like, before she went to the store, before, like, she walks out of the shop, this entire time, Edmund's like, what's your answer, though? Like, are you going to come with me? And she's like, you have to wait.
Yeah, fuck
off.
I'm
not giving, you don't deserve an answer right now because I wouldn't be in this situation if not for you from the very beginning. So, like, let's get this figured out.
And, like, give me 10 minutes after I literally murdered my first man. Okay, please?
Yeah. And I love that.
Can you let my cortisol levels decrease a little bit?
My God. Like, she's left alone in that brewery, and she's just, I'm done. I'm done with being taken advantage of by these creepy dudes.
I'm done with waiting for a man to make my decisions.
Oh my God, I loved it so much. And so... they find out that Benjamin got hurt. He saw Graves, and Graves did a little stabby stab. And now...
He followed Graves.
No, it was a nail.
And then he walked into a wagon that had a bunch of tetanus on it, and he ran into a nail.
Sorry, I thought that he got stabbed for a while.
I thought so too.
In the book. But guess what? Don't worry, listener. She's a book smart lady. And so she's like, take me to him. And then she sews him up.
She decides to be the surgeon of the ship, basically. She's like, everybody fuck off. I'm gonna get me that dead dude's equipment. Thank you so much. She sews him up and then
everybody
she's like,
out.
You need to rest. Yeah. And Edmund is still being like, hey, so did you make a decision? Is it now that you can tell me that you're staying with us? And she's like, what? I'm going to go talk to my uncle. Like, seriously, fuck off a little bit. And then when they go out, a Royal Navy is coming up the walkway. And they're like, we think you're pirates. And he's like, I don't know why you would ever think that. And then she's like, excuse me, kind sir. I am a capital L lady and my dad is a parliamentarian and this is my uncle. And we commissioned this ship to do shit for us. And are you accusing me of piracy? I hope not, because I'll tell Admiral Hurdle Blurtle and then he'll probably fuck up the rest of your career. So like, really think about this. And she gets them all out of trouble and it's incredible. And so he's like, is it now that you're going to tell me that you're staying with us? And she's like, get out of my fucking face right now.
God, the end of this book brought me so much joy, because after watching her put up with so much shit the entire book, the fact that the end of the book is just 50 pages of her being like, stop it.
Yeah. I already told you my stance on this. You're going to give me 10 minutes. You fuck. So then he like walks her down, because she's like, also, I don't even have like a fucking dress on. Although that happens before. But she like changes into her new dress. And when he's down there, he's like, after he watches her sew up Benjamin, he's like, oh, the competence boner I have right now is like just so bananas. And he's like, do you want help out of your dress? And she's like, yeah. And he's like, oh, my God, it's happening. She's forgiven me and I'm about to get it in. And then she's like, can you go get Bridget, please? She's the only woman here to help me undress. So goodbye. And he's like, what? And she's like, yeah, goodbye. I need a woman to help me. Thank you so much. And then she puts on her thing. Then she saves them from the Royal Navy. And then it's the epilogue now.
Yeah, so she basically talks to her uncle and he's like, I'm not going to stop you. But you know you're never going to be able to come back from this. And she's like, I know. But I think, like, basically I found my purpose. Like, this is, yeah. I get to put my book smarts to real life. Mm-hmm. I get to be with the two, like, she doesn't say this, but the two men who I love and dick me down real good.
Sure.
I get to adventure. Because she, like, the entire time she's been on the ship, she's like, man, I kind of like this freedom from propriety.
Fuck yeah.
And all of that jazz. And so, yeah, it's the epilogue. She's in pantaloons. She's in pants.
Yeah, they try to fake us out and be like, he's like looking off wistfully into the horizon. And Benjamin is like, you really miss her, don't you? Yeah, you really miss her, don't you? And he's like, I do. I miss her so much. I don't even want to talk about it. I miss her so much. They're not talking about her.
Surprise, surprise. The morning dove didn't sink, but the devil's luck did.
What? Oh, yeah. The morning dove.
The morning dove was going to sink. And the morning dove is. The morning dove made it just fine.
That we know of. Yeah. And so now they have a new one and they called her the Merry Widow. Mwahahahaha. Also, when they're on the ship together, they're like, oh, yeah, we're going to go bang it out. Also, how dare we not get a final sex scene, Eris Adderley? You put me through all of that bullshit and
all
we didn't get
that,
another sex scene.
I was so the fussy fuck about that.
Anyway, but they're about to go do the sex scene and we find out that like he's like, ooh, fingers crossed she stays with me in the stateroom tonight, because some nights she goes down to her surgeon's quarters.
It's real cute.
And she just stays there.
And I really love that the end of the book is a letter to her dad basically being like, don't worry about me kind of thing. And it says, the wisdom I found in the texts from your library gave me the courage to find a fitting place for myself. Though now I see that the true learning is somewhere out here, beyond pages and words. I think of you often, Father, and you are in my heart. If you meet with your brother again before I do, I just got chills. Tell him I found my own way as he suggested.
Oh, so good. Mm-hmm. What a delightful end.
I think, personally,
uh-huh,
as a book of a woman coming, finding herself,
Mm-hmm.
I think those were all of my favorite parts of this book, I think.
Yeah.
It could. You're right. He's a spineless little mealworm, but big and sexy and full of tattoos.
Yeah, she doesn't take Benjamin to task at all at the end. Because, like, this fucker at the end, when she's, like, all cut up and she comes in to, like, save his fucking life or whatever, he's like, oh, my God, Hannah, I thought to never see you again. It's like, why not, you dickbag? Why don't you just, like, say that you don't want your best friend to do this? Like, you're just going to let Edmund dictate the rest of your fucking life? Okay, but, like, that's... How dare you not fight for me, you twat waffle? Mm-hmm. Is what I needed her to say out loud to him. And she didn't. She was just like, look at Benjamin and his mealyworm, just sexy face. I love a mealyworm and I want it in me, is what she says.
Damn. That mealyworm don't understand tongue. It.
Wow. That mealyworm really does it for me, she said.
All right. I almost dread asking you this question, Mel.
What?
Do you have a lady love?
Yeah, I do. And it's because... Oh. I was such a train wreck today. Okay. My lady love is, God damn it, remember to take your meds. Okay. Hey, everybody.
Yeah.
Are you on medications at all? Do you need stuff for your brain to be good? I do. And wow, I realized today that the reason I was sleeping so much and the reason that I couldn't figure out my life and the reason that I was like shaking a little and the reason that I did not feel good and the reason that I couldn't focus on anything, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, is because I had not taken my meds for 3 whole days. What? Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, no meds. And so I was in like full-on withdrawal. Melody, get your life together.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Take your meds. Like, I need to change the reminder time, I guess. I probably need to change the robot that the reminder is on. I should probably also set a reminder on my phone in addition to the robot. Like, there are things I need to do to fix myself.
So I just recently actually went and found one of my old phones. And I turned it on. And I know that this is harder because you share a room with somebody.
Sure.
But, like, I take my meds because my Vyvanse, if I don't take it early, it's got me going. It's easier now that I've adjusted to it. But, like, when I first took it, if I didn't take that shit by 6 a.m., I was going to be up and motoring until way too late.
Sure.
And so now I still take it. So I generally take mine at 6 a.m., all of my medications at 6 a.m., but then I don't actually wake up. I go back to sleep. My life hack is I go back to sleep because it takes about an hour and a half to kick in. And so I wake up, take it at 6, and then go back to sleep for an hour and a half. And so when I wake up at 7:30, 8-ish, I'm like, all right, like,
here we go.
Let's do it. Which works out because I walk to my desk and get to it. But I wasn't waking up to the 6 a.m. I don't want to wake up to it anymore. And so I went and I found one of my old phones and I turned that bitch on airplane mode and it lives on the other side of my room.
Cool.
And now if I don't wake up, I will. Period.
It just goes and goes and goes and goes.
Something just screaming at me from the opposite. There's no.
Nice.
Great while I live alone. I apologize to anybody that I ever share a wall with or a room with ever again.
Yeah.
But so that's basically the point of this, though, is like that would probably help because I was also struggling until I like changed alarms and like modified some times and things like that. And basically like changed the trigger for time to take my meds because I'd just gotten too used to.
Right.
Whatever they were. And so it's really, God, it's so easy to brush it off.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden.
It's 3 days later and you find yourself in the middle of withdrawals and it's surprising. Wow. Yep. What a shock. What a shock I felt today.
That's a mood. Yeah. You go look at your pill minder and you're like.
Yeah.
Interesting.
There are so many pills in here that should be gone. Oh my God. What's your lady love?
So apparently we have a podcast-wide lady love today.
Okay.
And that is work on reminders for mental health purposes and personal health purposes, because I am especially with, I know we've mentioned it, but like I cannot possibly properly express how much I've been working lately. And I've been taking my ADHD meds and stuff again so I can like switch tasks a lot easier and things like
okay.
that. On one hand, that's great for my brain.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, it's a stimulant. And so I already am not super hungry. I'm bad about remembering to eat. And that just makes it so much worse.
Yeah.
And so it's not so much it's basically an alarm that goes off. Like I have one that goes off at like 11, one at noon and one at 1.
Oh,
just
okay.
As like, and so when it goes off, it's not a, you have to go eat right now. It's just kind of a self-check-in. Are you at all hungry? And then if by 1 o'clock I still have not eaten anything, I go get like a protein bar.
Which means cool.
I am eating twice a day for the first time in regularly twice a day for the first time in a long time. Which is nice. I can tell because I've been able to tell for months that I've been eating like crap. Like I haven't been eating enough. And when I do eat, it's not great for me. And like the last couple of weeks, I've been making more of an active effort. So I've been eating like twice a day. I've been eating a lot of cottage cheese balls. My little snacky snack has been like, ooh, I love a popcorn.
Nice.
Yeah. So your friends out there with brains that might be kind of like Mel and I, apparently set an alarm or change the alarm.
That's yeah. Make the alarm continue to work for you. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, keep being a badass and
love yourself as much as you love falling in love with that big old jolly man, Mr. Bone.
Ah, yeah, the cook. Keep being a badass and love yourself as much as you love walking into a garment shop covered in your enemy's blood and then saying that dress right there, I'll pay you double what they already paid you. That's the one I need.
Addition to that, love yourself as much as you love having a friend that lets you embrace the whimsy, also reminds you, is more than happy to remind you of all of the things nicely.
Mm-hmm. Of course, always nicely.
Are in fact unwhimsyable. Or should be. Gentle reminders. Love yourself as much as you love a friend with gentle reminders.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm feeling very appreciated right now. All right. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for hanging out with us again this week. If you're feeling it, share the podcast with some pals you think will enjoy us, whether or not they read romance. Word of mouth is the most reliable way to help independent podcasts like us grow. We'll be back next week with The Opposite of You by Rachel Higginson. It's a contemporary enemies to lovers chef romance that I personally loved. Heaving Bosoms is produced by us, Melody Carlisle and Sabrina Bradley. Editing is done by me, Melody Carlisle. Our theme music is by the incredible singer-songwriter Brittany Fonts, and our art is by the ultra-talented author Kate Pryor. If you like our show, remember to follow us on your favorite podcast app, rate us 5 stars, and leave a review. That one small action is a huge way to help the show. If you want to get in touch with us for advertising inquiries or anything else, you can email us at heavingbosomspodcast@gmail.com. If you want more of us, visit patreon.com/heavingbosomspodcast. You can also find us on Instagram @heavingbosoms, on TikTok @heaving_bosoms, and in our Facebook group, the Heaving Bosoms Geriatric Friendship Cult. See you next week.